Coming up on KUCB News, the Red King Crab quota has been cut again, and the Unalaska Raiders are playing at home this weekend. Stay tuned.
Local News is sponsored by Alpha Welding and Boat Repair Incorporated, providing boat repairs and conversions in Unalaska Dutch Harbor for the last 25 years. Our professionals are trained to use heavy-duty equipment, including boom trucks, shears, brakes, a water jet cutting machine, and a punch machine. Our fully equipped metal fabrication welding shop and machine shop are located at 1149 East Broadway. Alpha Welding and Boat Repair can be reached at 581-1785 or 581-2666.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Thursday, October 5th, 2017. For the second year in a row, crab fisheries in southwest Alaska are facing steep cuts and closures. The quota for this year's Bristol Bay Red King crab season is 6.6 million pounds, about 20% less than last year. The season opens October 15th. Meanwhile, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has canceled the blue king crab fishery around St. Matthew Island because of low abundance. The Pribilof District red and blue king crab seasons will also remain closed due to continued low abundance and uncertainty surrounding the accuracy of red king crab estimates. This weekend, the Kawalungan Tribe is holding its annual election and membership meeting. Competing for three council seats are Helen Brown, Thomas Robinson, Edith Marie Schliebe, Alina Siverson, Larissa Siverson, Pauline Tudiakoff, and Vincent Tudiakoff Sr. Those elected will serve three-year terms. Tribal members can vote Saturday at the Senior Center from 10 o'clock in the morning until 1 in the afternoon. The meeting will start after the polls close and conclude with a potluck at 5 o'clock. Anchorage hosted an unusual meeting yesterday as Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott gathered a cross-section of Alaskans to brainstorm paths forward on climate change. Representatives from the oil, gas, and mining industries joined up with environmentalists and local community leaders as they spitballed solutions. For Alaska's Energy Desk, Rachel Waldholz listened in.
About 35 people sat around tables in a conference room at the Dena'ina Center in downtown Anchorage. Giant notepads on easels waited to receive their thoughts, each with a label: adaptation, mitigation, research, and response. Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott opened the meeting, and he jumped right in.
And I don't need to emphasize here that climate change is real.
He called it a generational challenge, one that will affect the children and grandchildren of everyone in the room.
Because there is no stopping what is happening.
As participants gathered in groups to brainstorm, the state's contradictions were on full display. Alaska is an oil state that sits on the front lines of climate change. The room included people who depend on oil for their livelihood and those coping with the impacts of climate change on the ground, represented at the same table, sometimes by the same person. Joshua Kindred pointed out that paradox. He's with the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, the industry's main advocate in the state. Kindred said the word that comes to mind when he thinks about trying to address climate change is quixotic.
We're a state that produces 500,000 barrels a day on a planet that consumes almost 100 million barrels a day. So a lot of times when we talk about things like reducing our carbon footprint or what we can do at a local level, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that we have a very limited control to change the long-term path of climate change. So how do we advocate on a global level?
Sitting across from him, Karen Pletnikoff said she sees a big role for industry in Alaska. Pletnikoff represents the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association, which is working with communities to plan for climate impacts.
I think your specific industry has a wonderful opportunity to do a lot to protect the environment by preventing methane escapes in the north.
Across the room, former Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell argued that action on climate change doesn't have to threaten oil production. He said he's hopeful new technology might emerge to capture carbon emissions and suggested Alaska should be at the forefront of carbon capture and sequestration.
I think the joke's going to be on those who think oil and gas is going to go away. I think we have to be part of trying to make sure oil and gas are clean. we've done a pretty good job with oil and gas over the last 30 years. And if carbon's a new problem, let's figure out a way to get it out of it. But it doesn't mean kill it.
Joel Niemeyer with the Federal Denali Commission raised the issue of Alaska villages that may have to abandon their current sites because of climate change. Niemeyer said the state needs to make up its mind and declare a position, whether Alaska favors relocating whole villages to new sites or just moving individual families into cities, which is much cheaper.
If the state of Alaska is about relocating villages and not relocating families,
right.
That would be,
That'd be a good thing to know.
I think it'd be a good thing to know.
Niemeyer said ultimately relocation is out of the state's hands. It will come down to whether Congress is willing to loosen the federal purse strings.
Now, would they consider it? Yeah. Will they actually adopt it? And
they
don't
pay for it.
Yeah. Will they pay for it?
Yes.
Ultimately, that's what it comes down to.
That voice asking, will they pay for it? That's Admiral Tom Barrett, the head of Alyeska, which operates the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. And exchanges like that between the oil industry and people working with communities in the path of climate change were the whole purpose of the meeting. The governor's office plans to use the brainstorming session to develop its climate action plan, which it aims to release later this year. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
Meanwhile, the state has denied a climate change petition submitted by a group of teens. The petition asks the state to reduce carbon emissions, monitor greenhouse gases, and come up with a long-term climate change strategy. In late August, the teens hand-delivered the petition to Larry Hartig, commissioner of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. In his rejection letter, Hartig said the request posed significant consequences for employment and resource development. Seb Kirdland, a member of Alaska Youth for Environmental Action, the group that submitted the proposal, was initially disappointed by the decision, but the 17-year-old from Juneau says she isn't giving up.
I'm hopeful that the governor and the lieutenant governor will take action on this subject and their newly appointed members will do something about it.
The governor's office has made some strides to address climate change since the teens voiced their concerns. The administration has created a new position and appointed a climate change advisor. The Pacific walrus won't be protected under the Endangered Species Act. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced yesterday that the species has, quote, demonstrated an ability to adapt to changing conditions. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins reports.
Shay Wolf from the Center for Biological Diversity says she's been glued to the computer this week, waiting to hear about the protection status for the Pacific walrus.
Waking up early every morning to check the Federal Register website where they post the decision.
Her organization, which is an environmental nonprofit, petitioned for more federal protections for walrus back in 2008, the same year the polar bear was added as a threatened species under the Endangered Species Act. She says hearing the news that the marine mammal wouldn't receive the same protections was alarming.
This reads exactly like a political decision. I mean, if the Fish and Wildlife Service had protected the Pacific walrus because of threats from climate change, the Trump administration would have had to admit that climate change is real and it's causing real-world harms.
As Arctic sea ice has diminished, more female walrus have been forced to come onshore. It's become a yearly occurrence in the late summer to see tens of thousands crowding on the beach in Point Lay, a village along the coast of the Chukchi Sea. This year was the earliest haul out on record since the walrus first started appearing in 2007. Still, Patrick Lemons, a marine biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, says the decision not to list the Pacific walrus isn't political. He says the federal agency acknowledges, quote, environmental change is happening.
The decision was based on the best available science, and that was the recommendation that came out of the region was based on that information. So I don't think it would have changed under either administration.
Walrus use sea ice as a kind of resting platform. It gets them to rich foraging spots and provides an important place to nurse their young or rest. Lemon says scientists started to see a rapid population decline in the 1980s as sea ice disappeared. But recently, Pacific walrus have been observed making long trips offshore for food.
That suggests some of our assumptions before may have, where we didn't have any certainty about how walruses react. Now we actually have some information to predict walruses can change their behaviors as sea ice declines.
And Lemon says stampedes, which were thought to be a big threat onshore, aren't killing as many of the animals as expected. Overall, he says, the population appears to be stable. That was good news for Vera Metcalf, the director of the Eskimo Walrus Commission, who lives in Nome. An endangered species listing wouldn't have impacted subsistence harvest of walrus. But Metcalf says it confirms what the community already knows.
I think we're all relieved, and like I say, we're going to try to work on a common vision to move forward.
Several state agencies in Alaska, including the governor, have also released statements applauding the decision not to list the Pacific walrus. Congressman Don Young said he was glad the federal agency ignored the extreme political pressures to add a new listing. The Center for Biological Diversity says it plans to appeal the decision. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Raiders volleyball is playing at home this weekend. Unalaska will take the court against Cordova tomorrow afternoon at 4:30. The games will continue tomorrow night at 7 o'clock and then Saturday morning at 11. Fans can cheer on the volleyball team at the high school gym. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.